Start with our motivation. And really consider, what does it mean to be under the control of afflictions and karma? Get a sense of how your life lacks freedom to really be able to engage in things and engage with people in a very open way because of the interference of afflictions. Just contemplate for a minute how attachment makes your mind very narrow, how anger makes your mind very narrow, how the afflictions just draw you into a tight kind of knot. And then being under the influence of afflictions, we then create karma. And the karma that's complete karma with all the factors present, then it has the potential to bring a rebirth. And so we create another cause to be reborn in cyclic existence. And so every lifetime, we're creating many, many causes for many, many rebirths. And meanwhile, we, by following attachment and anger and the other afflictions, we deepen the imprint they have in our mind. We deepen our familiarity with them. So get some sense of, you know, how you want to be free, but you aren't free. And develop that intention to be free. And think of what that might feel like to go through your life without the afflictions, always setting perimeters around how you can see and engage and think about things. Imagine what it might be like to have a really open mind that is free of the afflictions. And then from that, develop the aspiration to free yourself from cyclic existence. And then applying that same thing to other living beings, wish them to be free of cyclic existence. And then generate the bodhicitta so that you can help them to be free. The afflictions are so sneaky that when they come up in our mind, we don't even see them as being disadvantageous. You know, when attachment's there, we never think, oh, there might be another way to relate to this situation besides I need, I want, I have to have, gimme, 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 I need, I want, I have to have, gimme, gimme, gimme. We never think that, you know, maybe there's another way to be in that situation without this incredible craving, you know, tormenting us. And similarly, when we're angry, you know, when we're hurt or angry or whatever, we never think, oh, maybe there's another way to relate to the situation. You know, we just believe in the afflictions so strongly. And yeah, if I'm angry, well, any sane person should and would be angry right now. There is no other way, you know. So we're so convinced in what the afflictions tell us that we don't even realize how they make us so narrow and limit our ability, you know, to engage in things with an open heart, you know, and with a clear mind, you know, because when we really look at it, we can see how much the afflictions get in the way. Yeah, but you have to spend some time looking at it. Yeah, and just seeing sometimes, like, I know for me, like, I'll see a situation and I'll think, oh, gee, that person needs help. I could help, you know, and like, I want to help. And then immediately an affliction comes and then says, but it's so inconvenient and, you know, you might get hurt or you might get dirty or they might take advantage of you or this or that or the other thing. And then, you know, we just believe that. And then, you know, stop ourselves from helping. And so we stop that connection that we could have had with somebody else. Yeah, or similarly, we go into a new situation and the mind, you know, we go in and we say, okay, I want to really be open and really see people for what they are. And then instantly the mind zooms in on one person that's there. Or maybe we don't zoom in on one person there, we're hooked on one person who isn't there. And then the mind's constantly thinking about that one person. And so we withdraw from all the other people we're with because the mind is too, you know, hooked on, I want attention from one person, not all the rest of you, one person, that person, you know. And then I got a plan how I can be with them and get their attention and this and that and the other thing. So do you see what I mean about the mind getting very small and narrow and how we don't even realize it, you know? We just think that this is completely the way things are, you know? That, like, yeah, everybody has special people that they always want to be with, and everybody has people they can't stand, and everybody wants to compete with everybody else and be better and get jealous of people who are better than them. I mean, the whole world is like this, so that's normal, isn't it? You know? And to think of trying to not, you know, to oppose those kind of mental afflictions, it's like, well, people are going to think I'm really weird. Yeah? Because everybody else gets angry at this, or everybody else gets jealous at this. And here I am, I'm not, so what's wrong with me? You know, even though the anger, the jealousy, or the craving, or whatever it is incredibly painful inside of ourselves. Yeah? Yeah, Geshe Nawandarge used to say that we're in India, you know, when still in India now, they have these donkeys. The donkeys really break my heart because they, you know, up in Dharamshala, they have the pouches over their back and they put stones and slate in it and everything. So here are the donkeys. I mean, they're so kind of dull and dumb and obscured and with this heavy burden. And they have a ring through their nose, you know. And so the guys who are carrying the stones or the slate, you know, they just tie a rope on the donkey's, the ring in the donkey's nose, and pull the donkey, and the donkey goes where the guy tells him to go. Either that or the guy whips him from the back. And so Geshe Nawandarge would say, you know, we're like the donkeys, and our afflictions are like the guys who are holding the rope. you know? And the afflictions just lead us around, and we very dutifully follow, carrying this heavy burden of our karma on our back with no power, you know, no ability to change the situation. Yeah? So, you know, we really have to see the defects of the afflictions and how they work in our life. And then have, you know, a very strong determination to be free of them. Yeah? So we have to really see how we are imprisoned by them. If we don't think we're imprisoned, if we think that because we live in the West, in a free country that has a constitution, that means that we're free, yeah, then we have the wrong idea of freedom. Yeah? Because most of the people we look around us who are promoting freedom are not free. They are not free of their afflictions, are they? You know, they're really like the donkeys. So, you know, we have to think about this and want to be free of our afflictions, you know. And then we have a real motivation to learn some of these topics that are challenging, because we see that, you know, learning about emptiness, you know, the wisdom realizing emptiness is the thing that's going to free us. And so the more we can learn about it, you know, even if we're just learning the words and the concepts and some vocabulary and we don't understand a whole lot right now, still the more we can learn about it, the more we're planting those seeds in our mind. Yeah? And those seeds, once planted, you know, then they can grow. And we can fertilize them in the future. So, you know, it's important to have that kind of perspective when we're practicing. Yeah? And not care so much what all your old friends say and what they all think. Yeah? Like they all... I remember my niece, I mean, now she's like almost 30, but even when she was 6... it was like, you wear the same clothes every day. You know? Can you imagine at 6 years old, already there's the thought that something's wrong with you if you wear the same clothes every day, or that you're denying yourself some kind of happiness. Isn't that amazing? You know, that young. Huh? I couldn't believe that I wore the same clothes every day. Yeah? Because freedom is, you know, looking in your closet and spending half an hour trying to figure out what you feel like wearing. And then none of it feels exactly like what you want to wear that day. Yeah? So you're dissatisfied, so you need to go out shopping and buy another outfit, because that one will really express who you are to the people that you want to impress. Yeah? Okay. So, learning about emptiness is important. Because that's what's going to free us from all of this craziness, you know? I mean, when you look at the world sometimes, you know, when they talk about the degenerate age, sometimes I look and I think, you know, I am so used to what is going on in the world that sometimes you don't think of it as being that crazy. Or you know it's crazy, but it's crazy on the other half of the world, so it's not so crazy where you are. Yeah? But when you think of what's going on and how people think and what they do, it's like something's quite wrong. Yeah, don't you think so? Something is very wrong. Yeah? when people think that being a suicide bomber is going to, you know, bring them a good rebirth, when they think that that's a virtuous action to kill other people, you know, they actually think this is a virtuous action. And that's what they teach to the children. Yeah. Something's wrong. Something's wrong, you know? When people think, you know, I just need to get as much money as I can and, you know, keep the government from having it, so I don't want to pay any taxes, but I want to use the road and I want to use the utility and I will, you know, depend on all these other things, but, you know, I don't want to pay my fair share of taxes, even though you have, like, you know, you're in the upper 1%, when you should actually be giving your money away. Yeah? Because you don't even know what to do with it. When you have that much money, what do you do with it? Most of it sits in the bank and sits in stocks and bonds and other things, and it's just a bunch of zeros with a number in front of it. You know? And you don't even know what to do with all of it, but you can't bear to give it away. Especially to people you think don't deserve it. Yeah? Because being born poor is your fault. Yeah? So, I mean, isn't something wrong with that kind of attitude? Yeah, I think something's very wrong. And yet, this is normal. In our world, this is normal. Yeah. So to really, you know, look at some of these things and see their emptiness, yeah, see the emptiness of money, you know, for one. Yeah, I have this paper and ink. Yeah, and it's amazing how you can switch it from account to account and here and there, and there's nothing that you even touch. Yeah? And that's the weirdest thing. It's like you don't even touch anything. But, you know, your money grows or your money decreases. That's very peculiar. Okay? So, you know, to try and see these things as empty and try and see, you know, ourselves as empty as well, so we don't get sucked in by a society that promotes afflictions as normal and as good. Yeah. Okay. So we're on 344, which is a great follow-up from Jeffrey, because it's about single and plural. Okay. So, 344, when different things are examined, none of them have singleness, because there is no singleness. There is no plurality either. You're going to go, but wait a minute, we just did that exercise with Jeffrey, and there were all these single things. Yeah? Is this one or many? Yeah? Is this one or plural? What do you say? It's got to be one or plural. Single or plural, what is it? Come on. Single, but here you know, Aryadeva says there is no singleness. You know? Aryadeva and Jeffrey in conflict? Yeah? Jeffrey's wrong? Yeah? Aryadeva trumps him? Or Aryadeva's wrong? And Jeffrey trumps him? I mean, come on. Okay? So this is refuting truly existent functional phenomena through the reason of there being neither one nor many, one nor plural. Okay? So when you examine functional things like pots, thank you. Light pots.
Light pot. No S.
Oh, yes, you're right. It's single. So when you examine different things like pot, okay, to see if they're truly existent, okay, then, you know, if they're truly existent, then they either have to be truly existent one or a truly existent plural, you know, one or many, single or plural, okay? So, is it one or is it plural? Is it single or is it plural?
I said your question, it's right.
come on, what is it?
It's one.
Single.
It's single. Are you sure?
That's the trick question first.
Are you sure it's single? What happens if I take off the handle and put it here? And what happens if I take off the, what is this? Andonized with steel base. Hard andonized with steel base. What if I took off that? And what if I took out the coating that it's coated with?
No, we need it to cook with.
Well, I need it for my example. So you can't cook with it.
Is your breakfast what's done with it?
Yes, that's your breakfast
book. Yeah. Oh, well, then you can use it. But you got to give it back to me. Okay, anyway, so are you sure when you take off all the bolts and the handle and the bottom and the finish, is it still single?
I'm not even sure it's still pot.
It's true. Is it still pot? I mean, after a while, it's going to look like a mesh, not like a pot, isn't it?
As long as it has a flat bottom and holds water, I think it qualifies, right? Or does it have to have some bulbous something?
Flat bottom, bulbous-based water holder. But then that would qualify this as a pot, and no idiot would call this is a pot. But it fills the definition, doesn't it? You call this a pot?
It could be called a pot.
You can cook her, cook her soup in this. This is a gong, my dear. It's not a pot. And this would be a pot, too.
Yeah, a ceramic pot.
Yeah. So is this one thing? When you look, it's not one thing, is it? Why not?
Because it's made of
parts. Because it has parts.
Because
it has parts. Yeah? So anything that you know, if it's inherently existent, has to be inherently single or inherently plural. Yeah? It can't be inherently single because it has parts. It's made of many things. And it can't be inherently plural.
How can something be inherently plural?
Well, a thing, that's right, a thing can't be plural. But if it's, see, this is the problem with inherent existence. Is, yeah, things conventionally, you can say this is single, and sometimes you can say it's plural, depending on how you're looking at it. But if something were inherently existent, you couldn't look at it from different perspectives because something that's inherent existent does not depend on anything else at all. So having a perspective means depending on looking at something in a certain way. Yeah, having parts means dependent on those parts. Yeah. So the problem with truly existent things is that they're frozen. Yeah, they're totally frozen because they're independent of everything else. So as soon as you give them one label, they can't have any other label because they are that. And because they're independent of everything else, there's no way for them to change from being that. And if you look closely, there's actually no way for them to come into existence, because to make the pot, you have to take many things that are not pot and put them together. So how do you take a bunch of non-pots and put them together and get something that has, by its very nature, pot? Yeah, it doesn't work. Okay? So this is, when you analyze, this is what you want to do so that you can really see how what is appearing to our sense consciousnesses does not exist the way it appears. And when we grasp something as truly existent, it does not exist in the way that we're apprehending it to exist. Okay? Which means that we have a whole lot of wrong consciousnesses. Because when things just appear to us truly existent, that's not a wrong consciousness, that's just mistaken, because it appears truly existent while it's not. Yeah. But when we assent to that appearance and grasp that appearance as true, then we're perceiving something that actually doesn't exist. Okay? Yeah. So that means, because like when we have attachment, when we have anger, you know, together with that, there's grasping at inherently existent. Or immediately preceding the attachment and the anger, there's grasping at inherent existence. Okay? So those are wrong minds. So that means when you're sitting there looking at the person you adore more than anybody else in the world, and thinking, I don't want to be separated from them, that is an erroneous consciousness. Gulp. Okay, yeah?
I just had a question. Is it all right for us to know that we're mistaken about that being a pot, and we just know that it's something that we label pot, but what we're trying to get away from is believing that it's a pot?
Right, right. Yeah. So we know when we look at it, we know we're labeling pot. We know it doesn't have any pot nature in itself. And then you know that the pot, the appearance of the pot, is then like an illusion. Because it keeps appearing truly existent. Yeah. So it appears in a way that it doesn't exist, like illusions do. Yeah, they appear real, but they aren't. And we're tuned into that appearance, so we don't believe the appearance. We don't bite the hook. Okay? So that kind of attitude comes after we've realized emptiness with at least a correct inference. Yeah? And then, like you said, we look at it and we're aware, oh, we're calling this pot, but there's actually nothing about it that is one. Yeah. Or I'm calling it mine, but there's actually nothing about this that is mine.
How does someone know that they realize emptiness? Would they just automatically perceive, understand that they play a role in everything that they perceive?
So how do you know you've realized emptiness? I cannot speak from experience, but I would think that your whole way of looking at things when you come out of meditation is radically different. And when you're in meditation, you know, you perceive just the emptiness. Yeah, you're able to really stay focused on the absence of inherent existence. And then afterwards, you know, when you look at things, you think, oh, they appear one way, but they exist in another way, like illusions. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to realize emptiness, it's not like it just kind of like boing, you know, kind of, you know, you happen to be meditating today and, you know, oh, well, I got emptiness. No, you have to create the cause for the realization. So, you know, it's this whole process of hearing, thinking, meditating, yeah, creating merit, doing purification. There's a lot of different components that create the cause for the realization. Okay, so if something isn't inherently single, it can't be inherently plural, because plural is a bunch of single things put together. So it's not inherently single, it's not inherently plural. It's not one thing, it's not many things. Okay, why? Because it has parts. Why? Because it's dependent. Okay? So if they aren't truly existent single, they can't be truly existent plural or many. Okay? And so external and internal phenomena are not truly existent because they aren't one or many. They are like reflections. So reflection is the example like an illusion, you know? When you look in the mirror, it looks like there's a real person there. Yeah, but there's not a real person. There's a reflected image that came about in dependence on the mirror and the person and the light and the angle. So there's this appearance that comes about dependent on many factors, but there's not a real face there. And yet you see, I remember watching one movie. I don't watch movies very often. I think it was the movie The Beautiful Mind, you know, about that man who had, somebody gave me the video, who had...
Schizophrenia.
So he was seeing things. So, but what was interesting, there was one scene where his wife was so frustrated working with him and with him seeing things. Okay. Well, here, I mean, his schizophrenia, seeing things that didn't exist, yeah. But she was so frustrated, she went in the bathroom, she looked in the mirror, and she just smashed the mirror because she was so mad at herself. And so it was like, oh, that person in the mirror is a real person, and I'm mad at her. Happens to be me, you know, but you smash it, yeah? So even, you know, somebody who knows that the mirror, that the reflection in the mirror is not the person, at that moment, got the whole thing very confused, yeah? And then had all this splintered mirror on the bathroom floor to clean up, you know, and it didn't do anything for her anger at all. Yeah, but, you know, so it's this thing of, you know, seeing how things are dependent, but when we grasp them as being truly existent, it's like thinking the face in the mirror is a real face, is a real person. And so when you get mad at that person, you want to clobber them, you hit the mirror. Yeah? But the same thing goes on when we get mad at somebody in our life. Yeah? We think they are... an inherently existing cat. Yeah? Yeah, we think, you know, something is inherently existent there. Yeah, always has been, always will be. Yeah. And so we don't even see people correctly. You know, we think that there's some kind of real person there, when all that we're seeing is just the product of a lot of different causes and conditions coming together. That's all, you know, when we look around at each other, It's like, okay, Marg is this set of causes and conditions. Yeah, and Tanya's that set of causes and conditions. And Sage is another set of causes and conditions. That's all. Yeah, but that's there. But we're saying, oh no, there's something personal about it. Yeah? Isn't there? There's something personal about that set of causes and conditions. Right. They're unique. Their own set of causes and conditions. Yeah? And so that's how we think, but it's totally wrong. Yeah? Totally wrong.
Worse than that, we think we know what their motivations are and what they're thinking.
Yeah, it gets worse, doesn't it? Not just that we think they're inherently existent, but then we can read their minds so we know their motivations. Yeah. And even though they tell us one thing, we know they're making an excuse, and we know that actually it's something else, and yeah. Okay. Okay, so they're not single and they're not many. Got to go tell Jeffrey next Tuesday. Yeah. Now, along that line, you know, he was having us focus on single and plural. One and different, you know, same and different is also another way that's very, very interesting to look at things. And that's what, when Linda was there after Tuesday night, we started on that. It's a pity she's not here. But to look and, you know, look at two things and ask yourself, are they the same or are they different? Yeah? Okay. So this is a pot, she said. So we have two pots. Are they the same or are they different? But they're both pots, aren't they the same?
You have to pick your context, you have to pick your criteria.
Different pots. There's similarities and differences.
Yeah. Well, something can't be both the same and different. If it's inherently existent, it can't be. Right. If it's conventionally existent, it can be. But with inherent existence, once it is that, It's that from its essence, because it doesn't depend on anything else. So either these two are the same, or they're different.
Try the gong on the other one. Let's see. They're not the same. Water.
Yeah, they're both flat bottom, bulbous based water holder. But are they the same or are they different?
Depends.
They're different.
Even if they looked exactly the same, they would still be different.
Yeah. Okay, so even if they looked exactly the same, they would still be different. Why?
One's near and one's far.
Yeah, right. One's here because they're still different objects. Okay. Yeah. When we're doing this kind of analysis, yeah, in terms looking for true existence, yeah, when we say things are the same, it means they have to be the same in every respect. Okay? And in that case, like you said, to even identical looking pots are not the same because they aren't the same thing. Yeah. Something can only be the same as itself. It could only be one with itself. Yeah. On the other hand, you know, if things are truly existent, if they're different, then they're totally unrelated to each other. Okay? So relationship, when we're talking about philosophy, there's two kinds of relationship. One is a cause and effect relationship. One is a one nature relationship. Okay? So cause and effect relationship, we kind of get that, don't we? Yeah. And cause and effect, do they exist at the same time or not? No. So can cause and effect be the same thing? No. Okay. But when we're talking about the relationship of one nature, it means that two things are kind of bound together. You can't totally separate them, like a part and a whole. Okay? So the part is one nature with the whole. In the same way, like we would say our aggregates, you know, our aggregates are one nature with the person. But they aren't the person. Okay? So they're one nature with the person. You know, my body is one nature with me. But my body is not. My body is not one with me. Because if it were one, in terms of true existence, then it would have to be exactly the same. So it's one nature, but it's also different. My body and me are different, aren't they? But they're one nature. But they're not one. They're different, but they're not different natures.
So is it like samsara and nirvana one nature?
No. I don't think you would say samsara and nirvana are one in nature. You would say they are mutually dependent. Okay? Yeah, they depend. It's another kind of dependence. They depend on each other. Yeah?
What can be one?
Pot and pot. The same pot is one with it, with itself. Yeah? Okay? So, but it's interesting when we're looking at the aggregates and analyzing what's the relationship between the aggregates and the person. Yeah? The person depends on the aggregates, but the person isn't one with the aggregates. Okay. But then you think, well, why not? If you have all the aggregates together, isn't that the person? If we have, you know, if we, okay, the handle is one nature with the pot, and so is the bottom, it's one nature with the pot, and all these different parts are one nature with the pot. They aren't the pot. But how about the collection of the pots? The collection of the parts? Shouldn't that be a pot? Yeah? I mean, okay, each part is not a pot. But when you put all the parts together, you get a pot. Don't you?
Is that literally the perishing aggregate sign? Is that something else?
Huh? So, I mean, when you put all the parts together, don't you get the whole?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't the collection of parts and the whole the same thing?
No.
Why not?
Well, look at Picasso.
What?
Look at Picasso. Picasso.
Look at Picasso. Yeah. When you put all the things together, you know, you have all these car parts. When you put all the parts together, you have a car, don't you? So isn't the collection of the parts the car?
It depends on how you put the parts together, too.
Oh, it does depend on how you put the parts together. Yeah. Because just the mere collection is not necessarily the car. But let's say you put the parts together in a correct way, so that it starts when you turn the ignition. Is the collection of parts the car? Are you sure? What else are you going to point to as the car if you don't point to the collection of parts? Yeah, go on.
Cars that doesn't mean an object.
car is the designated object. What's the basis of designation?
Car parts.
Is the designated object and the basis of designation, are they the same thing?
No.
No. Yeah. But when you point, you know, if there's a car over there or something, and I say that, yeah, are you pointing to the collection of the parts, or are you pointing to the basis of designation, or are you pointing to the designated object?
You're pointing to the basis of designation. And designating it.
And designating it car,
right.
Aren't you?
Because the designation comes from our side, not from the part, that thing over there side.
Does it come totally from our side?
No,
because
no.
It says car license plate on it. It says it has car written on it, you know, so-and-so motors.
That's right.
Yeah.
The designation comes from the designator, not the thing designated.
Yeah, the designation comes from whoever it is that happens to designate. Yeah, but not from the side of the object. But when we look at that thing, we say there's a car. And it looks to us as if that collection of parts is a car. We're not looking at it as there's a collection of parts, are we? We're not looking at it as something that's plural because it has parts. We're looking at it as something that's single because it's a car. Yeah?
Actually, for the men, we do look at all the parts. Like the car showroom, I would really look at it. You know, the tires. Everything is
important. Yeah, you look at all the parts. Okay.
Besides the parts and the necessary proper arrangement to make the car, there's also the intended use of it. Yeah,
the what?
The intended use of it.
Yeah.
The pot is not just the shape. The pot is partially, part of the definition of a pot is how it's used.
Yeah.
And a lot of things, most things that we create, have a use and an intent in their definition.
Yeah.
Then you get something like a rock, and then I don't know if that's
there. Right. But what's interesting is the Tibetan word, you know, for pot is bumpa. Mm. Yeah. So you know those vases that we have in the rituals? Those are bumpas. Mm. And this is a bumpa. Because the definition is flat, bottom, bulbous, based water holder. So we have many different words that would describe different objects. Yeah? That we would not say, oh, they're all pots, would we? Because, like you said, they have different functions. You wouldn't put a bumpa on a stove. Yeah, and you wouldn't put this in front of your llama who's doing a ritual. Yeah. Okay.
A potter might call a cup a pot. A friend of mine's a potter. He's throwing pots. He's a potter.
Clay pot.
Oh, clay pot. Yeah, right.
Or he used to be
not a cup.
Right.
And he was like, I'm throwing pots.
I'm throwing
pots.
Right. Yeah, right. He's making cups, but he says, I'm throwing pots. Yeah.
It's interesting when you see someone, I was thinking about this earlier, when you see someone using something that you think is functionally one thing, but they don't have that in their head, maybe mm-hmm. it's totally differently. Like a kid will take that and pound the floor with it, right? It'll make noise with it.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't think of it as the thing you put on the stove and cook vegetables food in.
Yeah.
And the function comes, doesn't the function come when we say we conceive and label? The function comes with a conception.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, the function definitely comes with conception.
Sure.
Yeah. Because we're the ones who figure out how that object is going to be used.
But it's not even in the label. It kind of comes before even
Or it comes with the label.
Or
sometimes after the label. Sometimes we label something something, and then we figure out later it can also be used for a new purpose. Yeah. This is now a paperweight. Yeah. Or it's a gong. It's a gong. But you see, if things are truly existent, it can't be a pot, and it can't be both a pot and a gong and a paperweight. Yeah.
And you turn it upside down, it becomes a statue holder.
Right. It's a statue. Yeah, so far.
A baby helmet.
Yeah?
The same object has different functionalities, like what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this or it's that or it's the other thing. It's the same object, but its function is different. Then it would have to exist independently in each one of those functions.
Oh, okay. So you're saying if you had one object that can be used for different functions, yeah, then would it have to exist independent in each function? Yeah, it would. But it couldn't, because something that is inherently existent is frozen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter about the label or the function. It's once it's this. But
yeah.
If you put a label on it for its function, then it becomes independent?
No. If things... See, true existence doesn't exist at all. Okay. Independent existence doesn't exist at all. But our mind projects independent existence on things. Yeah. And so that's the reason why she said, when we see, you know, like in... for me, this is a gong. So if I go into the kitchen and she's making soup in it, I'm going to say, Venerable Chuni, you know, I think you need to go to the doctor. Yeah. Okay. Because in my mind, I'm grasping this as this is a gong, and a gong cannot, you know, something, if I'm grasping it as inherent existent, then it can't change function. And it can't have multiple names.
And it can't exist that way.
Huh?
It can't exist as that independent.
No.
Because it does have different...
Different functions and different names. And what you use it for, it depends on the situation. Yeah.
The most important characteristic of anything, and its most important function, is that it's mine.
Yeah. And this is, yes, the most important characteristic is it's mine. And this is what gets us into trouble the most.
That's why the anger comes and
attachment to jealousy.
Because this is a gong. You're not supposed to use it as a pot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, especially if it's my gong.
Yeah,
and she's cooking tofu in my gong.
It's a super in the tofu.
Yeah. I don't know, but I don't think it's going to be very healthy because, you know, I don't know what this is leaching out. Okay.
If it's somebody else, but.
Yeah, if it's somebody else, like, okay, whatever. Let them work it out. Yeah?
So, we're talking about objects that needed an inventor, like a mind to create it.
Mm-hmm.
But what about things like stars or tree that already exist that didn't need a creator to make them?
Okay.
You know, so how is the label changing the function?
Well, if you look at the tree,
yeah,
you could call it tree. You could also call it timber.
Mm. You could call it shelter.
You could call it shelter. Yeah, or home.
Firewood.
Or firewood.
Pillar.
Yeah.
But there are some things that we don't change, their, like the sun. We don't want to allow, I guess.
Yeah.
We change how we think about
the, yeah,
with stubble, people's mind changing.
Mm-hmm. The thing that is real popular right now in science is there are people who think maybe we're all living in a simulation because the way mathematics works out is creepily, you know, in line with how things seem to function.
Let's come back here. Okay? So, yeah, I mean, even things in nature, they can be used for different functions, can't they? Yeah. And some people call the sun a star.
If it's a star,
how can it be the sun?
Some people called it a god.
Yeah, some people called it a god. Yeah. And, you know, we see a man in the moon, although I still can't figure out how people see a man in the moon, but the Tibetans see a rabbit in the moon. I can't see that either. Yeah.
Yeah. Some people see a woman in the moon.
So it's interesting, you know, how we think of something is going to change according to the label we give it, because every label is coming with a definition that is going to, if we understand that definition, it's going to change how we look at the object. Yeah, but if things are independently existent, that can't happen. Yeah, because for that to happen, it means that something exists within an entire environment, and it's conditioned. The role it plays is conditioned by the entire environment. Yeah, it's like that we were. Kind of what we were talking about before, you know, somebody might be a teacher, yeah, but when they come home and they're sitting and cooking dinner, are they a teacher? Yeah. If people are inherently existent, then they must still be a teacher when they're cooking dinner. Inherently, which would mean that they would still be teaching when they're cooking.
Exactly.
Yeah. Says our cook, the teacher.
The kid says, Dad, okay, school is over.
Yeah. So, you know, because we call, say somebody is a teacher, yeah, even after they've retired. Yeah, even during summer vacation, even when they go home and they're cooking. Yeah. So they're a teacher even when they aren't fulfilling the function of the label. But you see, we can do that when we see that labels are just labels, you know, that words are labels. But when we confuse the object labeled with the basis of designation and think that they're the same thing, then that those kind of changes can't happen. Because once the label, the object designated teacher, and the basis of designation, those aggregates, if they were inherently existent, then once that person is a teacher, always, yeah. And it also means they can never change careers. Yeah. And it also means they can't have any other identifying marks about them. Because a teacher is a person. Yeah. And, you know, Spanish, you know, being Spanish is a person. Yeah. Being a man or a woman is a person. Men and women are people. So if this is a person, yeah, if they were a teacher plus a woman plus Spanish, if they were inherently existent, there would be three people there. Yeah? Then if they're an aunt and a mother and, you know, all these other things, then you have many, many people there. Yeah. Which, again, you need to go see the doctor. You think that. Yeah. Yeah, because there's just one person there. But if there's one person, how can one person be all these different people? Because each of those things is a person. Yeah. So that's the thing with inherent existence. You know, once it has that essence, that nature, then you can't give other names, you can't give other functions. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So then I'm struggling with this idea that we are constantly seeing things as truly inherently existent.
Mm-hmm.
But Venerable Chinni can look at that and go over and cook with it. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't think it's inherently a pot. I mean, inherently a gong, so I cannot use it that way.
Right.
Or my friend comes home from work, I don't say, oh, you're not my friend, you're still the teacher. You know, I mean, it's, we in just a common sense, we don't see things frozen.
Yeah, that's it. We don't see things frozen in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when we look at something, you know, when we look at a person, there's something there more than the collection of parts.
Sure.
Yeah. That's where we run into trouble. Because we're not just seeing a collection of parts functioning in a certain way that, for convenience sake, has a label on it. We're seeing that person, you know. Like, Venerable Chunni is a nun. Therefore, you don't ask her out for a date. Okay? You know? Yeah, it's true. But if you know, you go ask her out for a date, she's going to be offended. I am a nun. Don't you know I am a nun? I am not dateable. Yeah? Yeah, so you see, when we're just normally relating to things, we're not having that grasping. They're still appearing true existent, but we're not grasping at them true existent. But when we start grasping, then we're assenting to that appearance as true, and that's when she's going to get offended because you know somebody asked her out. And, you know, whoever asked her out is going to feel hurt.
But not in every moment are we stuck in that frozen.
No, we're not always grasping things as truly existent. Yeah. But they always appear that way, but we don't always grasp them that way. But as soon as there's some emotion involved, there's some grasping. Even with positive emotion, yeah, even when we're creating virtue, there's still some grasping.
And we can't tell.
Yeah.
We can't
tell that we're doing it because we can't identify the object of negation.
Right.
Yeah?
It's just like that movie that you saw. Remember the
inn? Mm-hmm.
He couldn't tell, but he asked a reliable person.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he knows he has false appearance, so he asks somebody who's reliable.
Yeah, like, is somebody really there? Is that person really there that I'm seeing or not? He asked a reliable person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in a way, that's what we're doing when we're relying on the Buddha, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I lost the clock. Oh, okay, it's time to stop. Well, we did one verse? Okay.
And it's not plural.
Okay. Okay. It's one verse, but it's verse, we did 244. 344.
But it had many parts.
It's got plenty of parts, actually. Each one is an individual part.
Okay.
Venerable, is a virtuous action only virtuous if you're not grasping at it in the sense that you're not calling it virtuous, it just kind of...
No, it's because for ordinary sentient beings, even when we create virtue, there's grasping at truly true existence, because that karma will produce rebirth and samsara. Okay? But it's a virtuous karma, so it will produce a good rebirth in samsara. Yeah? And so very often, you know, when we're doing something virtuous, there's some grasping. Yeah? It may not be super pronounced, but, you know, I'm sitting here offering soak, or I'm chanting. Yeah? You have a good reason, you know, I want to become a Buddha for the benefit of sentient beings. So it's a virtuous reason, but there's still thinking of yourself as, you know, I'm this person creating virtue. Yeah. But it sure beats thinking I'm a person creating non-virtue. Yeah?
Creating non-virtue and not even noticing.
Right, exactly.
We actually did two verses.
Oh, we did?
We started on 344, and we got to 345.
Did we do 345?
No, I don't think so.
No,
we didn't. Since everything is
threefold? No, we didn't. But I don't know. I don't know. Another question? Sure.
So, the mutual dependence, is that the relationship between the mantra and the reciter that we were talking about last week?
Yeah.
Would you say that they're one nature, or does one nature only refer to phenomena and entities?
No, I wouldn't say the mantra and the reciter are one nature. I would say they were mutually dependent. Okay. One nature would be like the aggregates in the person, like the part and the whole. You know, that's what we would say is one nature. Okay. But mutual dependence... Cause and effect are mutually dependent, you know, goer and going, mantra and mantra reciter, yeah, cook and eating, people who are eating, yeah. They're different, but they're mutually dependent. Okay, so it's quite interesting spending some time thinking about all these different kind of relationships, things, different things some people can have. And are they different? Are they the same? Are they one nature? Are they different natures? Okay. Okay.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous action spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Lobsang's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase.
Idam
Guratnamandala Kanyatayami.
Due to this merit,
may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenrezig, may you stay until samsara ends.
May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma
done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially at Shravasti Abbey in the west floor.